Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we would like to recommend.
And we actually have two guest readers here with us today. We have Sam Barker and Chasley Dodson. Both actually read the same book. It's called The Book of the Unnamed Midwife.
Hello.
Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about the book?
It opens up at the beginning in a world in the future where, you know, something terrible's happened, like something apocalyptic has happened.
And I guess it has something to do with childbirth, right?
Well, the main character, when you go back to present day, she wakes up and she's in a hospital, which is eerily similar to 28 Days Later and The Walking Dead, but we mm-hmm. let that go. That's really the only strike against this book. And then from there, she leaves the hospital, and where she had been a midwife and had been delivering children, and a fever had hit, and all the children were being stillborn and mothers were dying during childbirth. And apparently this fever spread through all of humanity. And as it goes, it explains how many people have actually been affected and how many people are dead. And it's quite a staggering number. And the rest of it's just her journey as she goes out into the world and tries to survive and find some sort of civilization, or just actually she's kind of going against the flow where everyone's heading toward warmer weather. She figures it'd be safer to avoid where most people are.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It takes kind of a back road approach to finding a place to belong.
The title comes in because she's unnamed. The diaries don't give her real name. She uses other names. She takes on these other personas as she's trying to stay safe. She very quickly learns that being a woman in a world where most of the women are dead is extremely dangerous. And so she dresses like a man and takes on male names, tries to like change the way she looks, but the way she moves, does a lot of push-ups, that kind of thing. She's assaulted like almost as soon as the story starts. And so that's a good trigger warning for those of you out here who don't like to read about that. But there's not a lot of it, and it's not detailed, and she kills the dudes, so that's good.
Yeah, he doesn't get very far, which is
that's
good.
What matters.
Yes, right. Yeah, it is, yeah.
Is that something that happens throughout the book, or is that before she starts dressing as a man?
No, I mean, for her, it doesn't happen. There's a lot of peripheral characters that come in and out of the story, and one thing I loved about the story, is the author, Meg Ellison, did a great job of tying up all the loose ends. So she actually, if somebody came in and you saw them just for a little bit and then they left on their kind of own side adventure, she would revisit it at points and be like, oh, well, here's like half a chapter over where this person ended up.
Oh.
And it kind of laid out the terror of the world and how messed up it had become.
So I'm dingy, but how long was she out when she was in the hospital? Like, how long has the disease been going on?
Like a couple weeks.
Okay.
It's not real clear because she's been unconscious, and when she wakes up, everybody around her is
dead. It's kind of like that weird dream state almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know the first people she met, the two that were like from the restaurant, they were kind of like, oh yeah, it's been like this, you know, and this fell, but the gas is still on, there's electricity still over here, but I don't think it really gives anything away, but it kills 99% of all of humanity, and out of that 1%, only 1% of the 1% is female that survives.
The thing is, too, is, like, after the actual, like, virus part of it, then, and I think that was before, too, any women who get pregnant, the babies die, and they're very likely to die in childbirth. They're also way less likely to actually survive the virus itself. So she's kind of an anomaly, even in her world.
Right. Like, she survived it. So.
Yeah.
But there are no zombies, right?
No zombies, yeah. No zombies.
Everyone who dies stays dead.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Far more frightening thing, living human beings.
Right. It is terrifying.
How familiar did this feel to The Handmaid's Tale?
Okay, so that's really interesting because I started to think about The Handmaid's Tale, and then I started to think about Children of Men by P.D. James, and they both start off with this, like, infertility as this catalyst for, like, the collapse of society in this post-apocalyptic world. And I think what makes this one different is, first of all, the fact that the women are being wiped out. It's not just, like, the babies or anything like that. And so you have this extreme difference in population size. You know, the women are vastly outnumbered. And so that, the brutality and the subjugation of women, as in those books, but it's so much more because the scarcity of women is such a problem. And what I thought was really interesting is that, I mean, like, these are characters who are living in it, and so, like, they're commenting on their own society in a way that I think that a lot of post-apocalyptic books don't allow them to do.
Okay.
You know? And so, like, this one character says that a while after the virus has hit and, you know, the remnant of humanity is left, she says, every single man believes that he will be the one to succeed. He will father a new humanity. He will keep impregnating women despite the likelihood that it will kill them.
That took a grim turn.
It did.
But, this is where it's like, but as a man, now, mansplain this to you right now.
I'm going to unplug his microphone.
No, but really, one thing that was interesting to me about it is you could see the different types of societies that they come across. There are some very matriarchal societies where women actually create what they term as hives, where they actually will
get to be selective.
Yeah, and they'll pull in, say, you know, they'll have their 12 husbands. So they start doing that as well. It's not only where people are.
I don't know why anybody would want that many husbands anyway.
Well, you know, if you're in that kind of world, it keeps you safe. You get selective mates, and then, you know, you have 12 men to protect you if a group of roving travelers come along.
Also 12 men to possibly kill you with childbirth.
Well, one of the things that the midwife does is she goes around collecting contraceptives from all of these places because it's just laying around now, and she starts passing them out to people. So they're there. You just have to find the women who have been chained up and make sure they have access to it and then try to set them free. But in the hive societies, that was actually really interesting because so many of the other post-apocalyptic books in movies, you go right back into the white man is in control of everything again. But everything has been brought down. And so there are different kinds of societies like that coming up. And so the high one is a really interesting one where the women are like, you know, you men, you want any of this anytime, you're going to serve me. And I could get behind that.
And it's also there's only really two other characters that have an extended stay in the book. And that's one of the couple that really, she lives with the wife for the longest amount of time, and then the husband comes back from they're Mormon, so he's out on a mission during this apocalypse.
Oh my gosh.
The Mormons are still sending people out to find people to bring back, or at least that's the cover story. Her deal was she still wanted to get pregnant and wanted to try because what else are we to do? You know, we're all going to die. So if we don't at least try, then it's kind of futile. So it's interesting that everyone's kind of cover, and it shows that everyone behaves in different ways. But I was more of a fan of our hero going around and trying to make sure you wanted to be the person to try. Instead of just hey, well, here's what you're going to do because we've got you now.
She really is, you said that she is the hero of this book. I mean, there are lots of characters and lots of things going on. You know, some of her decisions are not the best, but she definitely is a hero in this story.
Yeah, and I like the fact that she was human. Like, she did stuff that was morally ambiguous and things like that. But a real person is going to have moments of moral ambiguity in their lives. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another thing I thought was really interesting about this compared to other books is there is no ever explanation of what caused the plague that started. There's not even really a guess. Civilization collapsed before they could find out what it was, how it started, and that's just it.
I mean, I imagine if everyone died, 99% of people died, the virus wouldn't be kind enough to only save the people who had been researching it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
The people would be too busy surviving to try to figure it out.
They're just like, I don't know. It killed everybody.
Yeah. I found that realistic, but something I'd never thought about. I mean, I think in stories you expect to have the answers. And
a lot of times I feel like it happens over such a long amount of time that there are newspapers, articles written about it. Whereas if something actually happened in a few weeks, would there really be enough time for people to get to the bottom of it?
According to what, I mean, it spread fast. Mm-hmm. And they kind of cover what happened to the people who were trying to figure out what it was and the fates they reached due to that.
As far as reader recommendations, would you recommend this for someone who liked books like Handmaid's Tale and A Children of Men?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot to like about that whole genre that this definitely fits into. Sci-fi readers in general, people who like futuristic things, people who love viral apocalypses, definitely.
The person I got the recommendation from was someone who read mostly nonfiction, stuff like that, and even a lot of upbeat books. And she was like, I read this book and it was amazing. And I was okay. I mean, the title itself comes off kind of hokey, but it makes sense within the first chapter. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's probably one of the better books I've read in the last few years.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I really thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's the first in a series, so they're at least the second one and third one's coming out in the future.
And the second one was so good.
It was.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move into our game show portion of the evening. We're going to do some post-apocalyptic music.
Thank you.
going to ask if you can cast the main characters. If this was going to become a blockbuster movie, who would be cast?
See, this was tough. Actually, it wasn't that tough. That's a lie. Because you only really have, like, one character you're going to cast. The rest of them are all just kind of bit actors and actresses. So you could get some good, like, high-end celebrity guest appearances. But I went for the midwife. I went with Ellen Page. Most people might know her from Juno, but she did an independent film called Hard Candy that pretty much exhibited the kind of person I would pick the midwife to be. And also, I think she could still, you know, cut her hair short enough and put dirt on her face, look like a beard. I think you could pull off her looking masculine enough to blend in with the right clothes and all that.
Yeah.
And then for Jodie and Honus, who were the couple she stayed with, I went with Amanda Siegfried. And for Honus, I went with Chris Evans. Get some namesakes in there, you know.
Yeah, very blonde couple.
The deal was that Honus survived going out into the apocalypse to gather things and to do a Mormon mission, so you couldn't have someone who's just like, who looks like me coming back, like, hey, dude, made it. It's like, no, you need someone who looks like they could go out in the
world. They could survive a mission in the post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah, but still look pure enough to not join a hive. So, yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to the rapid-fire questions. We're going to go ahead and ask them three questions each.
This can go to Chasley. If you could describe the book with one word only, what word would you use?
I would say power. And I so want to explain. Never mind. Rapid fire.
Okay, and Sam, what is an alternative title you would give this book?
The Fever. That was lame.
Okay, Sam, could you pick a soundtrack for the book?
Yeah. It would be all over the place because there's points where it would be really like you'd want some like heavy kind of music that would... You know, when all the bad stuff's happening, there's so much of it's just spent in wilderness. So, you know, I'd hear a lot of like, you know, like Americana type things, like more instrumental. You wouldn't really, I don't think you would be served well to have like a popular music soundtrack. This is where you grab someone from a band and be like, man, you should make like a soundtrack. And you'd be like, great.
This is the right question for you. They ask me and I'm always like, drums?
Polka music.
I don't know. Polka.
Well, okay.
Like years ago, Jay Farrar from Sunvolt did the thing for the Slaughter Rule, and it's kind of like that, where you want more of that kind of out, you know, more abstract sound kind of thing.
So, it needs to be more stripped down.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Chasley, what does the cover look like?
Oh, okay. The cover of this is kind of, like, beautiful, but, like, the longer you look at it, the more disturbing it gets. So you have this, like, long, deserted road. There's no cars. There's no people. And when you get close up, there's, like, snow, and the snow is covering part of the road, and the road itself is, like, broken to pieces. It's such, like, this image of, like, societal decay. It's just, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So, Chasley, did you think there was too little or too much detail in the book?
I am very sensitive to over detail. It drives me crazy. And so I definitely say that there wasn't too much. On the other hand, it is a short book and I could have stand to read twice as much of it. So some more detail and some more in that world I would have just loved.
Okay, so we learned a lot about what happened to the people in the book. But Sam, are there any animals in the book that feature largely?
There are animals. Animals do appear. Though I did notice there was like a big absence of dogs and things. It seems like if people were dying all over the place, there would be dogs like just eating people and she'd get attacked at some point.
Maybe they just made a super pack in the middle of, pack. They're all putting their own dog government together with their own super packs.
But one of the main things is also to avoid cities. So that may be a lot of it. I mean, she started out in a city, but after that it became pretty clear that that was not where you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Anyone who's read apocalypse books knows no cities.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, 1% of Houston's scary. 1% of Winnie's like, oh, okay. There's like four,
I can deal with that.
There's four people. I could take them.
And now we're going to roll and read a random section from the book. Chesley, go ahead and roll for us.
Some people had waited their whole lives to live lawlessly, and they were the first to take to the streets.
Bum, bum, bum.
It's like the Purge.
Yeah. They're all waiting for the virus.
It's like, when I was like, Handmaiden's Tale and The Road and The Purge all came together into one book.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us here.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.